This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the MVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. With society so dependent on technology, cybercrime is definitely on the rise. Joining me to explain how extensive cybercrime is and how to protect yourself is cybersecurity expert and former CIA technical director, Dr. Eric Cole. Thanks for joining me, Dr. Cole.
Oh, my pleasure.
You know, I'm a little curious. I kind of feel like the word cybercrime is a bit broad. Could you explain to me what cybercrime really is, though?
You're absolutely correct. Cybercrime is a broad term that people use to refer to any time you're using a computer or other electronics to commit a crime. In some cases, if I hack into a computer, steal data, that's clearly cybercrime. But there could be other cases where if somebody uses their phone to identify where a bank is and use the GPS system to get them to a bank to physically rob it, they technically did use a computer, but I don't know if we would really put that in the category of cybercrime. So I tend to lead towards more of the definition where you're using entirely computers to steal, commit a crime, or hurt somebody.
When it comes to cybercrimes, how really good are the laws? Only because the criminal could be in Germany. They could be in Russia. Can we really prosecute them for their crimes here in the U.S. if they're in another country?
Very, very difficult. And that's the fundamental problem, is the United States laws on cybercrime are a little behind. But even if they were up to date, it's almost irrelevant because most of the cyber criminals are in countries that do not have extradition treaties with the United States, and or cybercrime is either not illegal or it's supported by the government. And did I mention Russia at all? Right, that might be a good example of a country where we don't have extradition treaties. The government highly supports this activity, so it's very, very difficult for us to prosecute.
Yeah, when you said that, I thought of Snowden. He's still in Russia, right?
Exactly. He's chilling in Russia, drinking some Russian vodka on a daily basis.
In the day of social media, everybody has everything out there. You put your name, your birthday, where you're at. Is oversharing a problem, or is it just a buzzword to scare people?
I would say oversharing, or maybe a better term is overtrusting, is definitely a problem out there where for some crazy reason, people think that everything you get online is safe and is trusted. So if you get an email with a crazy link, people click on it. If you're on Facebook and you get some survey that somebody asks you to take, people just give out their personal information, their personal data, and they never step back for a moment and saying, could this be malicious? Could this be harmful? And if they did, they probably would make much better decisions.
Isn't that what antivirus programs are for? I mean, my firewalls, why should I have to be so due diligent? Everybody else is sharing. Shouldn't these programs be helping me to keep my information safe?
The programs absolutely help you. So having endpoint security, antivirus helps you, but ultimately the safety is based on your decisions. A great example is we drive automobiles with anti-lock brakes, with airbags, with all these safety features. But you can take the safest car on the planet, and if you give it to somebody who drives it 100 miles an hour into a tree, they can still get injured and still die. It's ultimately the responsibility of the driver, and the internet's the same way. I can give you a super safe computer that's locked down, it's up to date, it has all the endpoint security, but if you do crazy things, if you go to crazy sites, if you make bad decisions, you're still going to be compromised, you're still going to be harmed, and you're still going to have damage.
Well, how can you tell when you're going to a crazy site? I go to the same 10 sites over and over again. How do I know that the one of the sites that I'm looking at, I shouldn't be looking at?
What it really comes down to is you want to stick with the major sites. So if you're going to a Microsoft, an Amazon, a FedEx, a UPS, you're probably going to be okay. But if you're going to Bubba's Shipping Company or Crazy Eric's website for e-commerce and off things like that, that's where you start getting into trouble. And where it happens is when people start doing Google searches, where they put in a term like, I want a new car or I want a new phone, and they see these great deals. You can get an iPhone for 80% off. Now, let's be honest. What is the probability that if somebody is going to sell you an iPhone for 80% off, that the phone is legitimate or the site is legitimate? It's probably very small, but people get so caught up on the emotion of getting an iPhone for 80% off that without even thinking, they click on the link. And what I find is most people tell me, Eric, as I was clicking on the link, something didn't seem right, but I didn't realize it until after the fact.
I couldn't help but to think of the time someone stole my business credit card information, and I never used that credit card for anything. So that's how I have always felt like, when it comes to cyber crimes, I think it's kind of random. Going back to the business card, somebody used it and they spent $3,800 on some hotel in Phoenix, Arizona. I got all my money back. It wasn't a problem, but I never used that credit card. So how did they get that information?
Could be several cases. One is, and once in a while, the information is directly stolen from you, but most likely you gave your information to a site that was compromised or broken into. And the other thing that most people don't realize is when information is stolen, it's sometimes not used for 2 or 3 years. So if you had the same credit card for 4 years, it could have been a restaurant that you went to or a store that you went to 3 years ago. They didn't have good security. They got breached, and 3 years later, you're now being haunted with that transaction.
It's not the first time my information has been stolen or that I've known someone who had their identity stolen even. It kind of feels like nowadays it just happens. And credit card companies are so lenient. And they're like, oh, okay, well, look, if you say you didn't use it, and based on your history, it looks like you never did use it for that before, we'll just give you your money back. Is this a victimless crimes, or am I looking at it like not as serious as I should?
You are looking at it correctly, that you are going to get compromised. The probability over the next 10 years that you're going to have your credit card compromised or fraudulent transactions is almost a guarantee, but you're spot on. Always use credit cards, never use debit cards. And the reason is with credit cards, the money is not out of your account, and the credit card company is liable. Now, if they can prove that you were sloppy or you did something stupid, you could have liability. But if it was true fraud with a credit card, there is maybe a few hours you have to take in researching and providing records to the credit card company, but it is relatively low risk. The problem is with debit cards, not only does the money immediately come out of your account, but you're out the money, not the bank, until they prove it. So I always tell people, if you're doing anything online, shred and get rid of those debit cards and only use credit cards, because credit cards have been structured to provide a pretty good level of protection.
Besides credit cards, what other type of information is hackers trying to get from you?
Most of the information they want is all financially driven. So social security numbers, bank account information, credit cards, anything that can be used to either steal your identity or access that information, such as passwords. The other new thing we're starting to see is cyber blackmail, where if they can go in and get incriminating pictures of you or get information that you'd be embarrassed of, they're also targeting you and saying, unless you pay us $2,000, we're going to send this to your 20 closest friends. So anything that could derive money for the cyber criminal, they're going to target and go after.
Should you limit the amount of electronics that you have that have your information? Like if I have 2 laptops, should I not put all my credit card information on each one?
It always goes back to controlling and minimizing your risk. So if you absolutely need to have that information on all your devices and you're willing to accept the risk, it's okay, but you're better off mitigating or reducing that risk. So what I typically do is I have 1 credit card I use with my laptop for all e-commerce, and every 3 months I get a new one. I basically know that the probability of compromise is very high, so I just call up my credit card company and say, I'm seeing some suspicious activity, I'd like a new credit card. I also have a fairly small limit on it to minimize or reduce that risk. So that's the game that I play, is I have 6 different credit cards. I use each one for different purposes, have it on different areas. This way, if it does get compromised, I'm controlling and managing the risk.
Now, how safe are mobile phones? Because I use those a lot for transactions too. But is it any safer than using a computer?
The area where mobile phones become a safer is there's less functionality. Most of the malicious activity, like when you get an email with a malicious link or a malicious attachment, that is built to compromise a Windows system. So if you click on that link or open the attachment on, say, an iPhone, because it's a different operating system, you wouldn't actually get it infected. So that's one of the things I always tell people is if you get an email and you're not sure if it's legitimate, it's actually better to open it on your iPhone, where the probability of compromise is a lot less, than to open it on your Windows computer, where the probability of compromise is very high.
You know, everything is being attached to social media and to your Gmail accounts lately. You know, refrigerators, I think, are even able to get onto your social media. You have Alexa. You have all these things that are sitting in your house. And are they safe, though? Like, should I not be attaching my Twitter account to my fridge?
It always comes back to define safe. Right? What does safe mean to you? Anytime you have a device that's connected or accessible to the internet, it's hackable. It can be compromised and broke into. So you always want to go in and ask yourself, what do I gain versus what do I lose? If there's a real need or benefit to have those devices connected to the internet, then do it. But it does represent an exposure. And what a lot of people don't realize is Alexa and a lot of these other smart home devices, they actually are passively recording your conversation in your house. So this way they can get smart. So if you give them a request, they can respond very quickly. So you actually have a device that's bugging and listening in on your family. And the question you always have to ask, is the functionality worth that risk or exposure?
You know, why would companies have these options if they leave you digitally vulnerable? It just seems not very helpful for the consumer in the, you know, in the long run.
The problem is we are still in this transition point where people are concerned about cybersecurity, but they're not willing to be inconvenienced for it. So what's interesting is when we talked about Alexa, we talked about a lot of these social media sites, they have really good security built in. The issue is it's turned off by default because they don't want to inconvenience the consumer. So the good news is if you spend 5 or 10 minutes, you can enable and turn on a lot of security and be protected. The problem is if you don't take the time, by default, it's not secure and not protected.
When I was growing up, my mother used to always tell me, don't give out your real name. Don't give out the house number. Don't put your pictures up on the internet. You have to protect yourself from all the crazy people online. Now everybody's doing it, though. What happened to those old precautions? It kind of seems like my mother's the first one to throw up baby pictures now.
I guess it's one of those things, just because Johnny jumps off the bridge doesn't mean we should. Yeah, a lot of people, unfortunately, have two false perceptions when it comes to cyberspace. One is they don't believe they're a target. No one's going to go care about the pictures of my grandchildren or care about me or this or that, so I can put it up there. Second, they falsely assume that all this technology is secure, protected, and locked down by default. So unfortunately, a lot of people just don't understand the technology. They have these false misconceptions, and unfortunately, they're doing things that are putting them and their information at risk.
So with that said, what can you do to kind of alter your behaviors? Because right now it's kind of ingrained to share everything. So how can you slow down a little bit? What are things you can do?
First and foremost is awareness. Recognize that you are a target and that your information is at risk. Because if you don't believe that, then you're not going to actually seriously engage in doing things properly in cyberspace. Second, once you recognize that you really are a target and this is risk and expose, limit the amount of applications and locations that you utilize. So if you don't need 30 different social media sites, stick down to one or two. Go in and research the security that's available. Almost all software, applications, social media sites have built-in security. Spend the time to turn it on. And then most importantly, remember, on the internet, there is no delete button. So before you go in and hit send, save, or post, ask yourself, do you want that information to live forever? Because you might be angry at your neighbor and want to put up some obnoxious post today, but in 2 or 3 weeks, you're not going to be able to get rid of it. So always recognize there is no delete button and be very careful of what you do and what you post.
Before I let you go, I just have to know, antivirus, is there any which program that you sit there and say, oh, this is the one you should have on your computer?
When you look at the main vendors out there and you're looking at the full suite solutions, they're all very, very similar. I actually always joke around, I'm surprised there's not more lawsuits, because they all seem to be doing the same thing and taking each other's technologies, but they're all very, very similar. So the point is, pick one that you either like or gives you the better deal and put it on your system. But most importantly, remember that in most cases, that endpoint security antivirus is only going to be able to stop and catch about 40% of the malware. It's ultimately driven by user behavior of whether you do or don't get infected.
The reason I asked that is because I was a huge fan of Kaspersky. I really liked the program, but they were, I think, didn't they have to stop doing business in the U.S. because they felt that it was a Russian spy bot or something like that? And I've been jumping from antivirus program to antivirus program ever since then. So I'm not sure who to trust anymore.
Whoever you trust, you're not going to trust in 3 months. So what most people end up doing is, unfortunately, what you're doing is they'll use one product for a year and then just keep switching to minimize or reduce their exposure.
Is that smart, though, or should I just stick with one program?
Why, the programs are comparable. Each one has different strengths, different weaknesses, and does certain things better than others. So going in and switching between different programs is actually a very smart approach. So if one thing misses it, you'll catch it with another program.
Oh, okay, cool. Thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Cole. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
You can go to onlinedanger.com, and I have a lot of resources and blogs there. I also have a free chapter of my book, Online Danger, that's meant to help you be safe in cyberspace.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.